Tell me the story of Jesus. Don could not have picked out a more appropriate song right before the lesson. In our Sunday morning class, we've been studying the life of Christ with the purpose or the goal of following in His footsteps, becoming more like Him. And of course, we've been looking at the four accounts of the Gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But we actually, if we want to have a more full picture of Christ, then we need to look at the entire New Testament and even part of the Old Testament as well. Because part of the New Testament reveals what it's like, or what Christ is like, what He does, what He has done, what He's going to do. And the Bible even tells us that we're to be transformed into His image. Notice 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 18. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 18. Paul writes, this of course was written more than 30 years after Christ ascended into heaven. He writes to the church at Corinth, "But we all Christians, every disciple and follower of Christ, with unveiled face," nothing in front of us to distort the image, "beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord." So imagine standing in front of a mirror, and what are you supposed to behold? The glory of the Lord. Are being what? We Christians are being transformed into the same image. What image were you seeing in the mirror? The glory of the Lord. From glory to glory, just as by the Spirit of the Lord. So you and I, as Christians, our responsibility, our goal is to be transformed into His image more and more and more. As we come up from the waters of baptism, we look in that mirror, and that image is not very complete. It's not very clear. It's not easily seen, but every day and every week and every month and every year, as we look in that mirror, we're being transformed into that image. So that image becomes more complete, it becomes clearer every time we look into that mirror. But how do I know what I'm supposed to be seeing in the mirror? Well, part of that is looking at the four accounts of the Gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and seeing how Jesus reacted to people, how He dealt with people, His relationships with people. But also, we look into those letters that Paul and Peter and others, John, wrote to various Christians, in which those writers, by inspiration, tell Christians what it's like to be like Christ. Our particular text this morning does that, I think, in a very great way. It's found in Romans chapter 12, just a few pages back from what we were reading. Romans chapter 12. And the verses we're going to look at briefly are verses 9 through 18. Verses 9 through 18. This is a great little section about what it looks like to be like Christ. If you wanted to go to just a real small little part of the New Testament to get a pretty good picture of what it means to walk in the footsteps of Jesus, what it means to be transformed into His image, notice these few verses. Very short, easily understood, but easily remembered. And also notice as we go here that it starts out talking about love. Romans chapter 12, notice verse 9. "Let love be without hypocrisy." You mean love can be insincere? It sure can. Have you never been talking with someone or doing something with someone and they were being nice to you or kind or whatever, but at the same time you felt like it wasn't sincere at all? They were just doing it to put on a show. That's what he's talking about here. Don't let your love be putting on a show, pretending to be loving. Christ never loved anybody insincerely. Whatever he did for someone, whatever he said to someone, he did it sincerely. He did it for their best. So he says, whenever you love someone, make sure you do it for the right reasons. Sincerely, honestly, truly. Because that's how Jesus is, and that's how he was, and that's how he related to people, and that's how he acted toward people. He loved them sincerely. He did not put on a show. Now, the purpose of the commandment is love from a pure heart, from a good conscience, and from sincere faith. That's what love is supposed to be like. So when you look in the mirror, that part of Jesus that you see dealing with love is supposed to be a real, sincere love. Wouldn't you rather people not be nice or kind to you at all as opposed to pretending to be? That's what he says. Let your love be without hypocrisy. Now he tells us what our attitude toward good and evil should be. What was Jesus' attitude toward good and evil? First of all, he abhorred what was evil. So should we. You ever looked up the word abhor? It's a very strong verb in the original language. It's a very strong word. It's as strong a word as you could just about find. It's maybe even stronger than hatred. We're supposed to hate things that are evil. Hate them. Not just not like them, but hate them. There are a lot of things you and I are supposed to hate in this world. Anything that's wicked and sinful, we're to hate. Understand, Casey talked about one of those last week, and that was abortion. We should hate that. Not just have kind of a so-so attitude toward it, but hate it. Despise it. Homosexuality, we should hate it. Not hate homosexuals, but hate homosexuality. Abhor it. That's what he's saying here. If we're going to be like Christ, if we want to look in that mirror and see His image and see it clearly and to be like Him, reflect His image, then we need to hate those things. And at the same time, we're supposed to do what? Cling to what is good. Cling is another strong word in the original language. It has the idea of being cemented to something. Now, when you're cemented to something, I mean, you have a strong attachment to it. So he says, you cling to what is good. Everything that's good, you be attached to it. Now, there are some good things in our congregation that we do, right? We want to be cemented to them. Whatever good works we're doing here at this congregation, we need to be cemented to them, glued to them, attached strongly to them. So that means we participate in them, we're involved in them, we support them, all of those things. It says that's what Christ looks like in the mirror. You look in the mirror, Jesus hates everything that's evil, and he clings to everything, he's glued to everything that's good. But that's not all. He says, be kindly. How should we treat one another? How did Jesus treat people? Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor, giving preference to one another. Jesus put other people before himself. Jesus was not selfish. He wasn't concerned about his own needs and wants. He put other people first. He knew when he started his personal ministry, when he was 30 years old, that he had a very limited time. 3 or 4 years, that was it. And so during that time, he couldn't afford to be concerned about his own needs and wants. He had to put other people first because he was on a mission. Well, you and I are on a mission as well. So when we look into that mirror, we want to see someone who puts other people first, who's not solely concerned about their own wants and needs. Put puts Christ first, put their brothers and sisters in Christ first. Well, how do I do that? How do I put the church first? Well, I do whatever I can for the church. I'm not lackluster in my service. He talks about that later in this section. Puts them first. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. What are some synonyms that come to your mind when you read them? Maybe words like affection, tenderness, concern, respect, all of those. So when you look in the mirror, does this describe you? So far we've only looked at 4 or 5 things. Does that describe you? Is your love without hypocrisy? Do you put others first? Do you hate what is evil? Do you hate what is evil? Are you clinging to what's good? He talks about duties next. He says, verse 11, not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. That's all about our Christian service. All three of those things are. Not lagging in diligence. How do you lag? If you've got some people out working or something, maybe they're digging a ditch, I don't know. Can you spot the person that's lagging? That isn't hard to do, is it? It's obvious who's lagging. Not putting much effort into it. It's kind of half-hearted, halfway committed. If you look in the mirror, that's not Jesus. Jesus was never half-hearted about anything. Whatever Jesus did, He did it totally committed to it. So He says, don't lag in your diligence. Don't hesitate. Don't be idle. Because that's what Satan wants. Satan doesn't really care. It doesn't bother him at all if there's a church that meets here. That's fine with him. He's okay with the church meeting here. He's okay with us having Bible study. He's okay with us having worship services. He's okay with that. But He doesn't want us to be diligent in our efforts, though. That's what He doesn't want. He doesn't want us to be zealous. He doesn't want us to be energetic. He doesn't mind if we come here and are just kind of lackadaisical and half-hearted. That's what He wants. Jesus was never that way. Neither should we be. We're to be fervent in spirit. The word fervent in the original language means boiling over. If you were watching a pot with water or something and started to boil over, you would use the Greek word that's translated here, fervent. It's boiling over in spirit. See, that's not half-hearted, is it? That's not halfway committed. That means you're totally involved. So, does that describe you? Are you totally involved in your Christian life? Are you totally involved in the church here? That's the question. When you look in the mirror, do you see someone totally involved? Because that's the picture of Jesus. If we're to be transformed into His image, that means we're transformed into someone totally involved. Many years ago, most probably will not, unless you read church history a lot, know the name Billy Sunday. Some of you probably will. He was an evangelist of a particular religious faith. Very fervent in spirit. He's quoted as saying, people would come from miles around to watch him burn. And that's what he meant. He was fervent. He was on fire. That's what he said. He was on fire. So when we look into that mirror, if we want to be like Jesus and transformed into His image, we need to be on fire. Fervent in spirit. Serving the Lord. So does that describe you and I? But he goes on. What happens during times of distress? What happens during times of affliction? What happens during times of conflict? How does Jesus respond? Well, now that's what the next section is about. He says, first of all, we're to rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation, and continue steadfastly in prayer. First of all, why should we have hope? Well, Christians are the only people that actually have any real hope anyway, isn't that? Isn't that true? Does anybody outside Christ have any real hope? None whatsoever. Only Christians. So that's why we should rejoice in it. And be patient in tribulation. Did Jesus ever have any tribulation? Daily. How many times in our Bible study on Sunday morning have we read about Jesus being in some type of conflict, being afflicted in some way by the Pharisees or whomever? His own people tried to kill him when he went to Nazareth. He grew up. He grew up in Nazareth, and when he went back, people tried to kill him. So if we look in the mirror and we want to be like Jesus, we're going to see somebody that's patient during times of tribulation. That's what walking in the footsteps of Jesus is going to be like. We're going to have difficult times as Christians. And some Christians are going to have more than others. And during this time, he says, make sure you continue steadfastly in prayer. That's what Jesus did, remember? Whenever there was something major in his life that was going to happen, regardless of what it was, what do we find the gospel saying about him? He went aside and prayed. Sometimes all night long. That was going to help him deal with the situation. So if we look in the mirror, we want to see a reflection of Jesus, we're going to see someone who continues steadfastly in prayer. Now, some other things about how we deal with or how we conduct ourselves toward brethren who are in need. Verse 13, distributing to the needs of the saints and given to hospitality. That's what they did in the first century, wasn't it? If a Christian had some type of need, the other Christians met it, regardless of what it was. They just met that need. Even strangers were to be cared for, given to hospitality. The word hospitality there comes from a word in the original language which means lovers of strangers. Lovers of strangers. And strangers especially, if you were a Greek-speaking person in the first century, that meant people outside, away from you. People that you normally wouldn't have any association with. So given to hospitality. I want to look in the picture, in the mirror and see someone like that. We automatically think about the Good Samaritan, right? I've known people, Denise and I have known people who really lived given to hospitality. They were constantly, this couple I'm thinking of, when we lived in Jonesboro, he was one of the deacons there at the church. Him and his wife were constantly bringing people in that they had no idea about or anything about them. Find out they were in need, and we're talking about people who weren't Christians, into their house, and they would actually live with them. They did this continually. They were really amazing when you talk with them. Just wonderful people. They were given to hospitality. They loved strangers. That's what the word hospitality means in the New Testament. They loved strangers. Remember, that's one of the qualifications to be an elder in the New Testament church. You have to be hospitable. You have to love strangers. Be willing to take people in, help people in need. That's what Jesus was like. What about those who persecute us? Verse 14. How do we deal with them? Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Of course, we want to curse, right? That's the thing that we want to do, is bring a curse upon them, an anathema upon them. It says, but don't do that. Bless those who curse you. What about those who are rejoicing? What about those who are weeping? He says, verse 15, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. The idea of being sympathetic or empathetic with people. If they're going through good times, be happy for them. I know if something good is happening in my life, I don't want someone to try and bring me down. Do you? That's not what Jesus would do. But if someone was weeping, what would Jesus do? He would weep with them. Remember when his friend Lazarus died? Went to be with Mary and Martha, the sisters, and he went to the tomb. What did Jesus do? He cried right along with them. He wept. So he wept with those who were weeping. Sympathy. This means, verse 16, that we're to be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. Christian's humility. Don't set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Who did Jesus spend most of his time with? Remember, I'm looking in the mirror, and I want to be like Jesus. Who did he spend most of his time with? Not with the mighty and the high and the wealthy and the noble. On occasion he did, but most of his time he spent with those who were humble. Lowly. Those were the people. We need to be the same. He says, don't be wise in your own opinion. Don't think you're superior or more important than others. What turns you off faster than anything when you are with someone? If they think they're better than you are, boy, that comes across pretty fast, doesn't it? And it doesn't make any difference. I mean, if I'm around someone like that, it doesn't make any difference what they say or what else they do. I'm not going to pay attention to anything they say or do. They've just lost me. The moment I feel that they think they're superior, that's it. They could talk and say wonderful things that were true. They'd be lost on me. And that's why he says, don't be wise in your own opinion. Jesus never was. And Jesus was truly superior to everybody. But he never gave that off to people. Didn't seem haughty or egotistical. He didn't have the "if I can't boss, I'll burst" attitude. So what happens when people wrong you? Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. And if it's at all possible, as much as lies within you, live peaceably with all men. This, of course, goes back to some teachings of Jesus, doesn't it? Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. I think we need to give careful thought to that. Have regard for good things. Things that are right and honorable and just and noble, good. Be concerned with those things in the sight of everybody. And if it's possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. You're not going to live peaceably with all men. It's just not going to happen. Some people don't want to live peaceably in the first place, so it's impossible to live peaceably with them. But whatever you can do, that's what you need to do. Your part, he says. Live peaceably with all men. And he says, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it's written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Jesus is going to take vengeance. All those people who've wronged you, all those people who have mistreated you, who've oppressed you, who've talked about you, if they've never, and I think Christians forget this, if they have never asked to be forgiven, then God's going to take vengeance on them. They may be the most upstanding people in the church. They may be considered the most spiritual people in the church. But if they've sinned against you and they have never ask to be forgiven, God will take vengeance on them. And when God takes vengeance on people, it's a very ugly thing. Because it's eternal, it's never-ending, it's painful. The Bible describes it as a place where the worm does not die, eats at you all the time. But vengeance is God's part. It's not yours or mine. We're not in the vengeance business. God is. We're to do what? If your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire in his head. That actually might help him. It might actually help him. Make him see how wrong he's been and the wrongs he has done. So don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Isn't that a summary of Jesus' life, that last sentence, that last verse? Jesus had more evil done to him than any other person that's ever lived. His good life got him crucified. But he overcame evil by doing good, by dying on the cross. So when we look in the mirror, what do we see? Are we being transformed into this image we've just read about? Are we going in the other direction? We can go in the other direction. We can become less like Christ over time instead of more like Christ. You know, Jesus left us this perfect example, and not that we're ever going to live up to that perfect example, but according to 2 Corinthians 3:18 that we began this lesson with, we're to become more and more like Him every day, closer and closer to His image. So that the older we get, when we look into that mirror, that image is a little sharper, a little clearer, a little more complete, because we're more like Christ. But as I mentioned, that all begins when we experience the new birth, when we're baptized in water for the forgiveness of sin. Because that's when it all begins. We come up a new creature. And from that point on, we begin to look more and more like Christ. And so this morning, the invitation is yours to become a child of God, to experience a new birth and begin that transformation process where you become to look more and more like Christ. So if you need to respond, I encourage you to come as we stand and sing this next song.